and it's Ms. Wagoner. Good morning. May it please the court. Good morning, Mr. DeBroda. I am here representing Stephen Sines, who contests two conditions, special conditions of supervised release imposed by the court, which relate to sex offender treatment when he was before the court for convictions of bank fraud and mail fraud.
I'd like to ask you a question right off the bat.
Yes, ma'am.
Did Mr. Sines ever make any type of evidentiary record as to the nature of his relationship with Mr. Henry?
He testified during the hearing before the magistrate that he regarded Mr. Henry as one of the more stable persons in his life.
It was
also in the record that they were roommates in 1990. And if Ms. Barino admitted during the hearing before the magistrate that Mr. Sines had discussed Mr. Henry with her, not in 1990 when Mr. Sines was sentenced for his sex offense, nor during his period of supervised release from 1995 to 1999, nor at his sentencing in 1999, was there any prohibition against his association with Mr. Henry.
Would you say that the evidence in the record as to the nature of the relationship would show that they were involved in a committed, intimate relationship?
They shared a bedroom in 1990.
That's part of the record.
That is part of the record. That's part of the affidavit for probable cause supporting the misdemeanor conviction of Mr. Henry. And I think it's a fair conclusion based upon that. But I also believe that in order for a court or a probation officer to order someone to stay away from another person, there must be some evidence in the record that would support the order of no contact, some evidence that...
Well, there's reference here to the videotape that was found.
Mr. Henry was convicted of possession of a videotape in 1990, but the record is very clear that no one, not the probation department, not the court, not anyone, had any further evidence of any wrongdoing or active misconduct by Mr. Henry, and that, for that matter, Judge Tinder specifically found that Mr. Sines himself, there was no evidence to support any indication that he was violating or thinking about violating.
Except the polygraph, wasn't that something that he, the failure to pass the polygraph?
Well, the government objected to the admission of the polygraph results, and we also objected to the admission of the polygraph results for a number of reasons, primarily that the polygrapher assured us that we would be able to review those polygraph results with an independent examiner, and then he refused to do anything other than simply say that Mr. Sines had failed that question. I don't think, and Ms. Barino testified that even if Mr. Sines failed polygraphs or she learned from Broad Ripple Counseling things about his life, that she was not going to use that information to violate his conditions. There is no evidence. Mr. Sines is emphatic that he has not had any improper sexual conduct with any minor or anyone, any improper sexual conduct since prior to his 1990 conviction, and there is no evidence in the record to suggest otherwise. Neither the reason for his violation of his supervised release based on the 1990 sentence, nor the reasons he's before this court today, relate in any way to any sexual misconduct. Mr. Sines participated in an intensive sexual offender treatment program at Butner, which apparently was beneficial for him in that he broke through denials, was very candid, had a relapse prevention plan, and by all accounts and intents and purposes, that relapse prevention is working. Mr. Science does not contest, nor does he think it unreasonable, that a special condition of his supervised release is that he not be around minor children unsupervised, not because it is or is not a condition of his supervised release, but it is a condition of what is necessary to him to maintain his life in not engaging in that type of activity. I think of more concern to the community is his participation in fraud crimes. Certainly that brought him before the court in 1990, and it brought him again before the court in 1999. It seems that some type of counseling and supervision there might better protect the public. The conditions imposed by the court and by probation were not imposed because of the nature of the offense, nor the history and circumstances of Mr. Sines particularly. They were imposed generally because in the past he was a sex offender. He has paid for and is paying for that by the modifications in his lifestyle. We think it is an abuse of discretion, both that he be ordered to participate in another intensive program and specifically that he be ordered to have no contact with Mr. Henry when no one can point to any reason whatsoever other than conduct that occurred some 11 years ago that would suggest that there's any wrongdoing or continuing wrongdoing by Mr. Henry or Mr. Sines in the nature of sex offenses. Significantly, even Judge Dillon, when he sentenced him in 1999, did not see fit to impose such a condition. This is a new condition requested by probation and imposed by Judge Tinder only this year and imposed upon absolutely no evidence. I think that constitutes an abuse of discretion.
Thank you, Ms. Wagoner. Thank you. Mr. DeBrota?
May it please the court, I was the assistant U.S. attorney who handled the revocation proceedings in this case. I did not handle the underlying prosecution. It occurs to the government, Your Honor, that someone who has a long-standing and persistent pattern of behavior involving the molestation of 26 boys is someone that, while under the court's supervision, there is a paramount interest for that person to be under mental health counseling and a sex offender treatment program of the type ordered here. I did not hear the court expressing questions on the narrow issue of whether or not it has jurisdiction, given Mr. Sines' failure to appeal directly the imposition of the written judgment in this case. So I would leave that to what we wrote in our brief. We also think that there's been a very significant failure of Mr. Sines to comply with the waiver of appeal provision in his plea agreement. The government has lost the benefit of its bargain, something the court expressed concern about recently in the Hare decision. In this case, Mr. Sines, in exchange for a recommendation of a sentence at the low end of the sentencing guideline range, a recommendation he got, agreed not to waive appeal. We are now at the present posture of this case, and following hours of testimony before the magistrate, and about another hour in front of the district court, now the government is standing here talking to an appellate court about a condition in the judgment from which he had promised not to appeal and from which he took no appeal some years ago. The essential question that the defense would have this court consider is the wisdom of imposing that condition at all. We think that argument is foreclosed for those two reasons.
Let's go on to Mr. Henry. Does the record tell us whether he engaged in criminal conduct beyond the possession of the videotape?
I think that's enough, but let me explain why I think so. The first thing the court should recognize is what's not on the record is this idea, but which is evident from it if you look at it closely. Under the state of Indiana statutes that Mr. Henry violated, the misdemeanor possession of child pornography statute, Mr. Henry had to know that the material involved in that videotape was of a minor under the age of 16 engaged in sexually explicit conduct as that's defined in state law. He could not be guilty of possessing that tape without knowing its contents. According to the evidence that's presented in this case under testimony by Mr. Sines, that's a videotape of Mr. Sines molesting a 12-year-old boy. Now, in his testimony before the magistrate, he stated it was in their bedroom. The pre-sentence report indicates it's on a trip that Mr. Sines took with that 12-year-old to Disney World. But the point is quite simple. Mr. Henry had to know, if he knew the contents of that tape, that it depicted his roommate engaged in a molestation of a child. It's something that they possessed together. One is the producer, one is the possessor. But what it shows is that they had a criminal association that included criminal activity directed at children. Now, I think the proper question is not simply looking at Mr. Sines' activities or Mr. Henry's separately, but looking at them together. And the uncontradicted evidence in the record by an experienced probation officer who is an expert in dealing with these persons is that Mr. Sines is a person who fits the profile of a preferential child sex offender who acts through seduction. We know from his pre-sentence report that the videotape in question was produced through the assistance of another male, we don't know whom, and another female. But he works these crimes together, and that's in the record. The other thing we know is that after completing the Butner program, he violated the terms of his supervision, went to another state, and associated himself with a convicted felony child sex offender he met in the Butner program. Now, what does this mean? It means that Judge Tinder was correct, certainly didn't abuse his discretion in determining, as a matter of fact, that this situation was ripe with potential danger. There was a strong possibility that an association with Mr. Henry, someone who at a minimum failed to prevent the continued criminal activity some 10 years before, to Mr. Sines was one that would make Mr. Sines more likely to offend. What Judge Tinder found was that the association was one that created potential danger, and also that it would tend to be one that could interfere with the condition that Mr. Sines not associate with children. That is a condition which even Mr. Sines agrees was appropriate. At the end of the day, this is a question of risk assessment. And what the record does not have in it is the slightest indication of any evidence at all suggesting this district court was wrong in its determinations, or for that matter, the magistrate had it wrong either. There is nothing in the record to support the accusation that the district judge in this case discriminated against homosexual men. There is nothing in the record to suggest that Mr. Henry and Mr. Sines have the type of relationship that would be one that would even ask this question. And in oral arguments, to suggest that
what question?
That there is a relationship long-term and committed between these two men.
There is nothing in the record.
Absolutely nothing.
That would show them involved in a committed, intimate, loving relationship.
Nothing. The only thing in the record is the statement counsel's pointed to that in 1990 they shared a bedroom. We submit that's insufficient to even put us in the game of asking this question. Now, it's also significant, you'll see, and we cited this in our brief, that the probation officer even indicated that after supervising this man for some years, she hadn't even heard of Mr. Henry until recently. That's dramatic, because if it's a long-term committed relationship, why is it being hidden from the probation officer all that period of time?
Well, for the very reason that we're here.
Precisely. Because if the probation officer had known about it, the condition would have been imposed originally. But
I'm not necessarily agreeing with your view of why.
I understand that, Your Honor. But the essential point is this. If we were going to engage in a careful constitutional balancing of the questions of the comparison between the situation involving married couples, homosexual couples, and the like, the court should not be called upon to do it in this case on this record. Because at the end of the day, it's not anyone's sexual orientation that matters. What matters is the fact that Mr. Sines is a persistent offender involving children.
Would you agree that if Mr. Sines had submitted evidence that he and Mr. Henry were involved in a committed relationship, that the district court would at least have had to engage in a balancing test before prohibiting Mr. Sines from having contact with Mr. Henry?
At a minimum, there would be a right of association at issue.
Uh-huh.
That right, however, much like other rights of association that in similar situations have not been sufficient, the right of individuals, for example, to participate in white supremacist groups and groups which support the Republic of Ireland, all sorts of decisions, all of that would be a balancing test. The government thinks that in a situation like this, where the uncontroverted record shows that Mr. Sines has a moderate risk of reoffending, he has already violated supervised release. He has already done it as a result of conduct with another person with a prior history relating to sexual interest in children. On that record, he could easily be prohibited from associating with a spouse had this been a married couple as understood by law. And this court has recognized cases where even that would be permitted. Because at the end of the day, the question is, what's being balanced against the right, not the existence of the right? And this record uncategorically shows that what's being balanced here is the public's need for safety and to ensure that this man does not reoffend while on release. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. DeBroda. Thank you. And Ms. Wagoner, you have a minute and 15 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. On page 75 of the hearing before the magistrate, Mr. Sines testified that Mr. Henry is one of the more stabilizing people in my life. Ms. Barrineau also admitted during that hearing that while Mr. Sines was on supervised release in 1995, he did discuss with her Mr. Henry.
Nothing more than that in the record.
But she didn't see fit to impose any condition at that time that he not associate with him.
Mm-hmm.
The violation by association with a sex offender was the violation of his travel restrictions. He traveled out of the Southern District of Indiana without permission, and yes, he did pick up a sex offender, but there is no allegation by anyone that either of those people engaged in any inappropriate sex or any sex at all. Mr. Sines testified at the hearing before the magistrate that in Butner, because this intensive program had been so close and they had been friendly with them, that the counselors in Butner suggested that it was not appropriate to terminate all friendships. We think that to impose these conditions based upon conduct which occurred 11 years ago without any supporting evidence other than an inference against the sex offender that apparently they're saying he can never improve, I would suggest his association with Mr. Henry would be an improvement. Mr. Henry is at least an adult. But to impose those types of conditions after all this time, we believe is abuse of discretion, as the Eighth Circuit found in the Scott case cited in the brief.
Well, thank you both again for a very well argued. We've had a really remarkable day today, and the case will be taken up.